professor, arrogantly waiting for me to grab her. For once, she didn't hiss at me, although I think it took every bit of self-control she had. Henry was by the dresser with Riley. My dog was easier going than Trip at his calmest. He looked perfectly content to go up into the attic whenever we could get him up there and maybe catch up on a little shut-eye. Riley, on the other hand, appeared as if she was ready for a fight. I could see her saying, "I'd eat those zombies, I would, Michael, but I can't get at them from here, so let's move." Ben, well, he was just running around in room-sized circles, God knows thinking what. He stopped every turn or so and sniffed, probably hoping he was going to find bacon. He was going to be sorely disappointed. "Justin, you need to go up now. Mom can't handle Henry by herself." I don't think Winters was all that thrilled with my need to get the animals up, but wisely said nothing. "Why are they just staring at us?" he asked. "Dunno. Don't care. Avalyn was no one's business but ours." He grunted as he hefted Henry's considerable bulk up, as did I. We'd all trimmed the fat since the zombies came. Getting supplies, stress, little food, and the constant running had honed our bodies into the machines they were supposed to be, and not the sedentary dumps they'd become late in the 20th century. Not Henry, though. He seemed to be stubbornly holding on to the past. He wore his girth like a badge of honor in the face of all things apocalyptic, and I loved him even more for it. But I also thought maybe he could help a little by lifting, or at least thinking light thoughts. I was grunting like a sumo wrestler as I shoved him up through the hole like a sack of loose ground chuck. There was a brief moment where Justin teetered on the edge of being able to hoist the weight or come tumbling down. "I told you, Talbot, we should have got a border collie, but oh no, you had to have the Marine Corps mascot, which makes no sense, since Marines are lean and mean and Henry is neither of those things," Tracy said, breathing heavy from the exertion as she helped pull on Justin. "He can hear you," I said, pushing his ass up. "Good, maybe he'll lay off the donuts." They had finally got him up, and judging by a long, throaty grunt, I don't think he was all that thrilled by the handling. Justin walked him over to the platform. "Carol, you ready yet?" I asked. "I will not have you pushing on my backside. It is very undignified." "None of this is the highlight of my life either, Carol, but getting eaten is a whole lot worse," I told her. Yeah, that went over real fucking good. I was now caught in a crossbeam of death stares. Add to that, the zombies were coming out of their stupor. Winters had to pull me away from the grip of a zombie that had gone shoulder deep through the door. "Grab the rat dog," I told Winters, as I did a balancing act on the edge of the dresser, as far from prying hands as possible. I was thinking that the animals were in tune with us more than they had ever been, because I'm telling you right now, Ben understood me. He stopped on a dime, spun toward me, and growled. "Chip, sorry about that," I told him, as Winters ran and picked him up while he was still. The dog barked happily at Winters, even gave him a little kiss, which Winters wiped off across his shoulder. But Ben growled at me as I took him in my hands. "I didn't mean it," I said as I handed him up. I was staring straight at his ass when he let go an eye-watering bubble of gas. "I don't think he's accepted your apology," Justin said. "Like that needed to be voiced," I told him as I wiped my face. There wasn't actually anything there, but the smell was so cloying that it felt like it was. "Let's go, Riley." Winters hoisted her up, and I had her through the hole. My arms were still up over my head, and I only had my heels on the dresser when it was rocked from behind. My ass landed hard on the wooden top. My neck and head swung back dangerously close to the door as multiple hands reached out to entangle themselves with me before I unceremoniously slid forward and thumped to the floor, thoroughly battered. I'm sure most of you at some point in your life have fallen onto your ass and whacked yourself on the way down. It's disorienting. And sure, can be painful, but there are times where it travels to whole new realms of agony. There was this one time, not at band camp, I was working construction. We were pulling a new phone cable through an underground conduit. One guy was feeding it, and it was my job to pull it through. It sounds easy enough, but when you're talking a few hundred feet of underground pipe, things tend to get difficult. So there I am. I've got the feed cord wrapped around both of my hands. I'm leaning back at a 45-degree angle, using all of my muscle and mass to pull this fucking thing back. Shouldn't be too hard to figure out what happened next. The cable snapped. All of my weight, coupled with all of my force, and then not even being able to use my hands and arms as braces, meant that I impacted the cold, indifferent concrete at what felt like crotch-breaking speeds. Two words. Tail fucking bone. I wanted to get up and walk it off, but I was in serious distress. It was one of the most uniquely painful sensations I had thus far encountered in my life, and momentum was the only weapon involved. I'd never, nor have I since, had my asshole hurt like that. If I had to give words to the description, it was like someone had shoved a street pole up my ass while two someone else's had gripped each side of my pelvis and cracked it in half like you might a crab at Red Lobster. It took 15 minutes before I was finally able to get over the notion of an ambulance ride and further explanation to the doctors and nurses on why I had a street pole up my ass. So, yeah. I was reliving all of that as I sat on the floor, wondering if this time my age might have finally showed itself, and I did indeed break something. "You all right?" Winters asked, seeing my obvious distress. "I'm hoping I only hurt my pride," I told him. "If nothing is broke, we need to move fast. Not much between us and them anymore." "Carol," I grunted, "it's time. There's no one else to hide behind." I stood and then immediately hunched over. The pain wasn't quite done with me. "Dad, you need me to come down?" I shot up a hand without standing up just yet. "I don't want to," she said. "Mom," Tracy yelled, "get your ass up here." "I had a little bit of an accident a few days ago," she said in defense, as if that explained everything. "What?" Tracy asked. "I threw them out," Carol responded. "What are you talking about, Mom?" "I don't have any panties on. There, I said it. Are you happy now?" "I'm definitely not happy," I told her, just beginning to tentatively stand completely up. "I have a dress on and no panties." "All right, we get it," I told her. "Let's get this done." Winters expended a few bullets. The zombies were getting more bloodthirsty as they stripped the door away. "Talbot, we don't have long." "Carol, I don't care about your bare ass. Let's go." Yeah, I was surly. Zombies were breaking in. My entire nether region felt like it had been Mike Tyson'd. Plus, my mother-in-law was making this exponentially more dangerous. At this rate, I was unlikely to make it up there myself. Winters had enough. He wrapped his arms around her and hefted her onto the dresser. He joined her immediately, and then got her under the hips, trapping her skirt between them, and put her straight up in the air. Justin and Tracy were leaning down to pull her in, but she would not raise her arms. "My shoulders hurt," was all she offered. I loved my mother-in-law, but she was pushing the boundaries of becoming a major burden. Right this very second, four people's lives were in danger because she was being petulant. Winters was struggling to hold her up. She was exerting almost none of her own energy. I climbed up to join him. "Raise your fucking arms, Carol, or so help me God, I will leave you down here," I said, almost in her ear. She must have seen something in my eyes that this wasn't a veiled threat. Oh, she winced and moaned as she raised her arms up, making a great show of the pain she was in. But at least she did it. I know Tracy was raining down some hate stares at me, but for the love of all things holy, right at this very moment, I was not looking up. I was getting grabbed repeatedly, and the dresser was being pushed away from the door. The latch had finally fallen out of it. Now it was just a weight game, and the zombies had more of it. Winters and myself were more forced off than anything as we jumped down. I bit my tongue nearly in half in the hopes that it would keep me from feeling the pain lodged deep in my rectum. Yeah, it might be hard for you to read that. It wasn't particularly easy writing about it. I checked the magazine on my Uzi, told Winters to step back, and unloaded that whole thing into the zombies. Blood, gore, brains, clothing, wall, wood, dust, hair, and maybe a unicorn or two were all splashed and splattered in a circle around the opening. Chunks of things I could not identify were raining down and slathering the top of the dresser and coating everything else. "You enjoy that?" Winters asked. "How the hell could you not?" I told him, putting it down. I had used up all the ammunition, and I didn't think Knox would be decent enough to reload me. There's something inherently fun about shooting a shitload of bullets all at once. Not sure what it is, and I realize not everyone shares this sentiment, but for those of you that do, you know what I'm talking about. Those of you that don't knock it till you've tried it. The only thing that might be better, outside of the bedroom, is watching things explode. Oh, I might have done a double entendre there. Should probably just leave it alone. Go, I tapped him on the shoulder. The zombies were in disarray. I had blown back the initial few rows, and the rest had not yet clambered their way to the front. He made it up with no problem. Just as I put my feet on what was left of the dresser, the door was blasted inward. The dresser toppled over, and me with it. I was able to turn enough that I didn't land once again on my bruised behind, but where I landed was the least of my problems. Zombies were streaming in over the debris they'd created. I was pushing back with my legs, attempting to get as much traction as I could. Going for the hole in the ceiling was out of the question. Going out of the room the traditional way was also a big fat no. The window was my only out. I grabbed the windowsill and pulled myself up and out in one smooth move. I stretched until I was rewarded with the lip of the gutter. I heard and felt the screws start to give the moment I put some serious weight on it. I did not have the opportunity to pull myself up or swing a leg onto the roof because the entire gutter system on this side of the house pulled away, taking me with it. I'd like to say my landing was cushioned by a bulker's abdomen, but that wasn't the case. I came straight down on my legs, rolled my left ankle to the point where something definitely snapped, tendon or bone, tough to tell. I cried out as I collapsed. Pain was now searing into me from ankle to groin. Before the zombies came, I would have just stayed there and cried and screamed until someone came to help me, maybe brought me a cold cloth, cradled my head, and waited with me another 5 to 7 minutes for an ambulance to show up. Then I would be rushed to a hospital where I would wait for 3 hours while they filled out a great number of forms regarding my medical insurance. Then there would be the obligatory hour-long wait at X-ray while the technician does whatever X-ray technicians do, probably shining up those lead sheets or wiping his lunch off of one. Then he or she would put me into positions that would cause more pain, but only for a few seconds. When they were done confirming what everyone and their brother could tell just by looking at me, I'd be wheeled back behind my privacy screen where I would wait another 2 hours. Invariably, a drunk asshole or a desperate junkie would be put in the curtained area off right next to me. They would yell, swear, sometimes shit themselves, and generally be among the biggest douches known to mankind. Sounds pretty awful, doesn't it? I would have taken that particular scenario in a heartbeat over the one I was in now. Instead of lying in a gown in a safe, clean environment, waiting that 7 hours on pain medication, tended to by clean, polite healthcare professionals, I had to get up and drag my useless leg behind me, which was right up there with placing my balls into the loving embrace of a cold steel vise and turning the handle until they ruptured. Or, I guess I could just get eaten where I lay. Believe me, I considered that an option. So far, I'd avoided that particular door prize, but as soon as I saw a zombie poke its head out of the window and look down at me, I realized I was about to be a winner if I didn't act. The zombies were adapting, getting smarter, as all predators do. But that didn't mean they actually were smart. With a considerable amount of fucking pain, I had to roll out of the way as the zombie that had seen me quite literally pitched headfirst out the window in its haste to get to me. I'd like to say he crushed his skull. Instead, he merely snapped his neck, maybe spine. Normally, this would be enough to take out your enemy. Not this one. He couldn't move anything below his shoulders, but that chomping mouth was now entirely too close to my side. More zombies were coming to have a look. I had to move now. I got up on my good foot and leg. The pain rocketed up my bad leg like it had been shot through a super collider. Bursts of agony began to ignite within my skull. I had to hop. That is the fastest form of locomotion one leg can make. Each hop up meant a violent collision back down to the earth. And just those few inches were enough to jolt my entire being in fresh, ripping torment. Stupid zombies were piling out of the windows, most breaking something. Less stupid zombies were making their way back downstairs and out the door to find me. It was over. I couldn't run. There was nowhere to hide. I had some ammo, but certainly not enough. I did a quick scan of the fence-enclosed backyard. Even if I made it to the barrier, I didn't think I'd be able to climb over it. There was a swing set with a small clubhouse to the side and a decent-sized above-ground pool. Did I make that clubhouse into my fort, like the kids that had lived here before me had done? Didn't seem like it had worked out too well for them. Anyway, it was too small. I wouldn't be able to stand or turn very effectively, and it was only about 6 feet off the ground. I'd have zombies tearing at me in seconds. It was the pool I was subconsciously moving toward. It was a little more than halfway full, completely green and covered with enough growth as to seem like it had its own hard-packed surface. I was thinking the buoyancy would help take the weight off my ankle, and the water would hinder the zombies' ability to get to me. My traitorous imagination attacked immediately, producing all kinds of nasty things hiding just under that layer of slimy vegetation. But I was fairly certain it wouldn't be an alligator, or anything quite that carnivorous. I was 2 feet from the ladder, and the nearest zombie 20 feet. It was anyone's guess who would make it to the pool first. The ladder was a piece of shit. The thing wouldn't have passed quality control in a Chinese sweatshop. "Must be French," I said as I grabbed the rail. The entire thing swung around like it was being buffeted by hurricane-force winds. I was hop-jumping up each rung, convinced the thing would collapse somewhere between the 3 steps I needed to ascend. By the time I got to the top platform, the nearest zombie had run, arms outstretched, right into the ladder. I pitched over to the side and right into the drink. It wouldn't have been cosmically correct if my bad ankle hadn't got caught up in one of the rails on the way over the side. My scream was muffled by the scum-covered water-like substance as I went down, but it was still very much audible. I was hanging upside down, dangling by a cracked leg and in danger of drowning in 3 feet of water. Who the fuck dies that way in a zombie apocalypse? Pretty unfucking dignified, if I'm being honest, and not even close to heroic. Where I was getting so much air to expel my screams was beyond me. But when I took in that first chunk-laced bit of water, I knew my time was growing short. I wriggled my leg back and forth violently in an attempt to free myself. Maybe it was the lack of oxygen getting to my head, or that I was so distracted by the taste of green algae, but the pain seemed muted, like it was happening to someone else, or possibly to me, but from a distance. Or who knows, maybe it was because I was too far gone to even care anymore. When the piece of shit ladder finally decided to let go of me, I almost didn't care anymore, content to lay on the green vinyl bottom of the thick slime-covered pool, the disgusting liquid a couple feet above my head. I'd swallowed enough of that so-called water that I figured I'd die from some waterborne illness anyway. It was when I felt something with many legs walk across my face that I decided maybe I should get up and face the zombies. I was wondering what effect the slimy liquid I'd splashed into was going to have on my rifle. This particular rifle was not known for its ability to keep shooting while gunked up. I came up out of the water, spewing all manner of organic and inorganic material. I coughed up things that looked like half-eaten, green-brown, moldy tuna fish sandwiches with pickles and maybe some teeth. I was on my knees. It gave me the ability to keep my head above water and also not put pressure on my ankle. Figured it was all for naught anyway, that a couple of dozen zombies were about to join me like it was free-for-all Sunday at the city pool during the hottest summer in recorded history. I don't know if you've ever had the displeasure of this fine social activity, but it's not all that fun being in a pool with 200 other people, packed so tight you can't touch bottom, you can't move around. It's like being the styrofoam popcorn packing in a shipping container. Can't splash because your arms are locked to your sides, though someone is invariably able to splash obnoxiously near you. Obviously, you can't swim around. You are not beating the heat because of the press of flesh and the highly unsanitary quality of water filled with people that feel a pool is nothing more than a giant urinal, or who are too wedged in to get to a bathroom. Only your feet are cooled by the water. But that's no good, because the concrete bottom is shredding your soaked-through soles. When I was able to pull the vegetation from my eyes and face, I realized I was still very much alone in the pool, as bipeds go anyway. I found it more than strange that the 40-inch-high, 4-millimeter-thick vinyl pool wall had been enough of a barrier to confound the beasts. There were zombies afoot. Of that, there was no doubt. But they weren't paying any attention to me. I was like that weird kid in class that constantly keeps sticking a hand down the back of his pants every time he farts so he could catch a whiff of what he was delivering unto the world. What? You didn't have that kid? Lucky you, because the wet gas our kid pressed from his bowels smelled something like old roadkill blended with garlic and mildew. He was a strange one. I think I remember hearing that he'd become an IRS agent. Seemed to suit his particular talent. Of all the pencils and pens I'd borrowed during my high school career, I made absolutely sure not to use one of his. Even got a zero on a surprise quiz rather than use the infected writing instrument he had attempted to hand me. I swear it walked off my desk under its own power. Weird, the gopher holes the mind travels down at any given time. I spun slowly, taking stock of my situation. Zombies were everywhere, yet none were looking directly at me. They were much more interested in the house, where I could now hear multiple people screaming my name. How in the hell did I respond without giving myself away? I realized I was in a delicate predicament. If I responded and the zombies discovered me, I wasn't going to get too far with this busted ankle. But if I didn't say something, it was good odds that someone was going to risk a rescue, and I could not afford for that to happen. Luckily, I was spared from having to do anything at all on my own. Winters and Justin emerged onto the roof. They were frantically looking around. I wanted to shout, "Here I am!" to wave, something that would garner their attention and allay at least my son's fear. I'm sure Winters would have been just fine if I'd disappeared off the face of the earth. "Dad? Is that you?" Justin yelled. He was shielding his eyes and looking directly at me. He couldn't have seen much in the murk of the pool. My head and shoulders were covered in the floating filth and gave me a pretty good camouflage effect. He was moving closer, coming down sideways along the dangerous slope of the roof. I slowly raised a hand to the halt position. "You all right?" he yelled. I couldn't say anything, but the zombies were sure getting interested in his voice, and also in the fact that he was pointing at something. That something being me. Unlike most dogs, zombies seem to understand the concept of spotting something with a finger. It was Winters who thankfully put all of this together and pushed Justin's hand down when he saw the zombies looking around to see what the food on the roof was looking at. Winters turned about 90 degrees, so he wasn't even peering my way. "Going to assume you're more or less okay, Talbot, and that somehow that cesspool you were hiding in is masking you from disease. Hopefully they'll leave your area. But you can't stay in there all night. It's going to be cold. You could die from exposure. If you want to fight it out, shoot 2 rounds, and we will do our best to give you the hole you need to run." I silently thanked him. Justin turned in the same direction as Winters, though he was having a much more difficult time not looking at me. "Everyone here is fine, Dad. I love you." "I love you, too," I said, no more than a hush of air escaping my lips. They came out and checked on me periodically. I was still there, and still couldn't do much of anything, although my ankle had begun to knit itself together. That hurt like hell. But what was really becoming troublesome was the cold. It was a decent autumn day out, somewhere in the mid-60s, if I had to take a guess. Actually a beautiful day as far as that goes, but not exactly what we up here call swimming weather. And with night approaching, I had to think it was going to drop at least into the 40s. survivable outside, even without a jacket. But when every part of me was exposed to the cold, no way to get dry, so completely miserable and injured, I would be in very real danger of dying from hypothermia. The zombies weren't attacking. In fact, they weren't even actively looking for me. I might as well have dropped off a cliff. Unfortunately, they also weren't leaving, like they had some legacy memory that something good used to be here, and they wanted to bask in the remembrance. The sun had just begun to set when the first of a violent series of shivers racked my entire body. I did not know that toes could be made to shake, but I knew they could cramp. Had to add that to my list of complaints. There was a good chance by tomorrow morning my vampire virus-infused body would be able to repair the break. The problem was the human casing I was in being able to make it through the night. It might be a faster healing process if I wasn't also attempting to fend off freezing to death. I had to clamp a hand over my mouth when my teeth chattered loudly from a body-twisting spasm. I needed to send my mind away and let my body deal with it as best it could. So I found a gopher hole. I was 10 the first time I saw a ghost. Not the last time, not by a long shot, but definitely the first. And you know what they say about your first. It's terrifying and you never forget it. Yeah, I was more relaxed already. That's the way you start a side story, a way to distract you from what is actually happening. You remember the first time you were truly terrified. We had just moved from Boston proper to a sleepy little suburb called Walpole. I knew no one, I hung out with no one, and maybe that is who came out to hang out with me. I was feeling pretty pissed off at life when I left the house. Well, actually pissed off that my parents had put me in this position in life. My mother had tasked me with a list of chores longer than my arm. I walked into the garage, past the stack of boxes she wanted me to bring into the house. I walked past her car, loaded down with all manner of cleaning supplies, down the driveway, onto the roadway, and hooked a left. I had no idea where I was going, but anything beat what my day was going to entail if I stayed home. Sure, there was a piper that was going to need to be paid for my transgression, but for good or bad, I never really gave a shit about that future piper. He was always kind of a bitch. Well, that's sort of a lie, and even if I'm relating a story just to keep from freezing to death, I should at least attempt a truthful telling. I didn't dismiss the future piper because he was a little bitch. I didn't give a shit about the future piper because he literally did not exist in my present tense mind. He was not born yet. I couldn't see him standing in front of me, so therefore he had absolutely no bearing on my life whatsoever. In my broken head, there was no room to entertain thoughts of consequences. Wait, that makes me sound like a sociopath. Was it apathy then? Was I apathetic to ramifications? Maybe even back then I knew I could easily be dead before they or any form of karma caught up with me. But I'm pretty sure it was just a case of who gives a fuck? The textbook definition of apathy. I'm sure there's a 1,500-page psychiatric book that discusses this in depth. No need for me to go through it. I hooked another left when I got to the end of the next street. I think I heard my mother calling out for me a couple of times as I increased my pace. I didn't know it then, but I was heading toward Indian Hill. Not the hill proper, but the far left side, which was dominated by streams, bogs, and heavy woods. Pretty much the ideal setting for all things creepy. I was on a side street in Walpole, which basically means I was alone. In Boston, a side street was where you got your tattoos and really good pizza. Here, it was empty. So I took a hard turn into the woods. No reason why I chose to verge at this particular spot. It was visually the same as the entire wood-lined roadway. There was no path, no break in the fauna, no blazed trail to let me believe walking through here would be easier than any other place. This was just where it was decided that I should turn in. Sometimes there is not an explanation. Remember those words. I'll be using that exact same phrase a little later in this narrative, but the next time they will be a lot chillier. Whether it was in my mind or was an actual phenomenon, the temperature was much cooler when I went into the woods. Had to have been a balmy 85-ish on the road, and I realized the canopy the trees made and the nearness to water would have a cooling effect. But I could see my breath. That seemed excessive. The niggling in the back of my skull didn't start for a few hundred yards. The pines had given way to white birch, which always make a normal woodland seem ethereal, or at least strange. They have a subtle glow to them that makes everything around them appear blanched. Even as chills ran up and down my forearms, I walked forward like I wore blinders, lost in my own thoughts, not taking in the scenario around me. An icy finger scratched its way from my lower back up my spine and circled the top of my head. I had to stop right where I was and look around. I no longer felt as if I were alone, and not in a good way. It was that overwhelming feeling that I was being watched. I did a slow spin and scanned those trees, peering hard at all of them. I didn't see anything, but the feeling intensified so much that I was thinking now might be a good time to vacate the area and maybe go to a less creepy place. The problem was the automated guidance system I'd employed to get here had suddenly gone on the fritz. I'd turned myself around. Now, I wasn't in any true danger of being lost in the woods of Walpole, but when you want to leave somewhere quick and don't know which way to go, well, that can be terrifying. It's easy to succumb to panic. Everywhere I looked was the same, an endless line of trees, no path, no vista, no big rocks I could have used to mark the land. I walked a little longer, hoping I was heading in a direction out, and I did my best not to constantly keep looking over my shoulder to see if I was being followed. I didn't want whoever it was to know I knew, or that I was lost. For a while, I was watching where my feet were going, doing my best to avoid rocks and branches. To this day, I wonder why I looked up when I did, and I permanently regret that decision. There she was, 10 feet up in the air, her head hanging askew. If I dared to approach, I could have reached up and touched the bottom of her dangling bare feet, though I had no such desire. She was not some wisp of smoke, an ethereal mist. No. She appeared as real and solid as the tree she was hanging from, though I could not see the rope that kept her tethered there. She seemed a few years older than me, 15, maybe 16. Blonde hair. She might have been pretty were it not for her bulging eyes, swollen, protruding tongue, and blue face. She was dead, and had been for a while. "Help!" barely escaped my mouth. But she heard it. Oh, yeah, she heard it. That tiny cry for aid was a catalyst. Her eyes turned to me. Her head, which rested completely sideways on her cracked and broken neck, straightened itself out. Sounded like dry, brittle branches breaking under the weight of a nightmare. She floated down toward the ground, though she never really touched it, hovering a few inches above. I would have pissed my pants if I had not been stone-cold paralyzed from the crown of my head to the soles of my feet. She raised her arm up and extended a finger toward me. "You did this to me," she said in a tortured voice, the rope having twisted the ligature of her vocal cords, making it sound like she was whispering through razor blades. I involuntarily backed up a step. She floated 2 steps worth closer. Again, she hissed, "You did this to me." Now these words had some force to them. This threat seemed to overcome my stupor. "Please, I don't know you." As if a case of mistaken identity would offer up some defense to the specter before me. Her head cracked loudly to the side, as if she had maybe forgotten her neck was broken. Her eyes took me in, really took me in. "No, not yet you don't, but you will." Might have only been 10, but I knew where this was going. The vengeful demon was going to make me pay for a transgression she believed me responsible for, and, yeah, fuck that. There may have been maniacal laughter, difficult to say, as I was running as fast as I ever had. My heartbeat was like a bass drum, and the air was rushing past my ears. Somehow, I popped out at the exact point I had entered. I didn't stop running until I got all the way home. You'd think this would be the strangest part of the story, maybe even the ending. But you'd be wrong. When I ran back through the garage, grabbing a box to bring into the kitchen where my mother was, she smiled and told me, "That was quick." Sometimes there is not an explanation. And in this case, I don't think I wanted one. I never told anybody about that ghost. Even spent a few days at the library trying to find some story about a local girl committing suicide or being murdered. Didn't turn up anything. In hindsight, retelling that story from decades ago was most likely not the best avenue of retreat for my mind. I was already freezing to death. Thinking of that chilling encounter had done little to warm me up. Night had settled in for the long haul. I could feel nothing below my shoulders. I had been making tiny tsunamis on the pool surface with my uncontrollable shaking. Now, even that had stopped. I was pretty sure I had read somewhere that this was not a good development. The moon had not yet started its journey up, but the sky was clear, and there was some visibility with the light the stars offered. The zombies were still fucking afoot. Like a stubborn wart, they would not go away. Not that I could have done anything about it anyway. I wasn't even sure how I was going to get out of the pool. It seemed beyond my capability to move any part of me. "Dad, you still all right?" Justin asked. His voice brought me back to the present. I was still alive, and that was something. It wasn't pitch dark, but I couldn't see him. I had to think he could not see me either. Not sure how he thought I was going to answer without ringing the dinner bell. This was when I ran into a whole new and deadly situation. My body was failing me, or more aptly, I was failing it. I was teetering like a bombed-out building that had lost 3 of its 4 support columns. It was a slow process, but the direction my body was going was taking my head with it. And I was powerless to stop it. I commanded, demanded, ordered, then finally begged my arms to move and brace me so that I would not be submerged within the oily confines of the polluted pool. Didn't work. My head drifted down and bounced off the bottom where my lips made contact with what I hoped was only a small tree branch. I don't know if I've ever been more powerless during a life-threatening event in my entire life. At least, I mean, when I knew it was happening. I was holding my breath. I think that probably happens automatically, but I knew my limits. Best of circumstances, I wasn't going to go more than 45 seconds. Like the vast majority of humans, I liked to breathe. I didn't see the benefit of knowing how long I could go without air. I felt the same way about the other 3 necessities in life. I ate, and I drank, and I returned the finished product, never having any desire to find out how long I could push my body to go without. I used to watch this show, Naked and Afraid, where they would send a male and female to some remote, inhospitable armpit of the world, usually only supplied with a flint and a knife, and they had to survive for 28 days. Sometimes they both made it. Usually one did, sometimes neither did. They suffered hardships like thirst, hunger, plague proportion, bugs, heat, cold, or constant rain. The question I always asked myself was, why? Why the fuck would someone send their resume in for this? Is it important to have the skills necessary to survive in extreme circumstances? Of course it is. Very important. But testing them out under useless conditions just seemed like an arrogant waste of time. And could possibly even lead to harm. Who knows, maybe harm that could prevent you from actually using those skills to survive for real one day. I would never even consider what they were doing. Hell, man, they didn't even get any sort of financial compensation for what they did. Did the 15 minutes of fame have such an allure that they could not resist? Pretty fucking elaborately useless pain threshold game. Where was I? Oh, yeah. I was dying by at least three different ways, and if I managed to pull myself from the jaws of death, zombies awaited. I tilted my head to raise my mouth a few inches off the pool floor. Not enough to make a difference, but being able to make my body do anything at this point was a victory. Next was a savage demand to my shoulder to do something besides connect my arm to my torso. It flinched at the request, but yielded to me, and I was able to gain another inch toward salvation. The command then went down an arm that was much less willing to begrudge me, like I was an affront to everything it stood for. At this pace, it was a foregone conclusion that my loved ones were going to find me in the morning with leaf-choked lungs. I think it was my middle finger that finally relented and figured we were on the same team, no doubt remembering the good times. Amazing what your fuck-you finger can accomplish when it sets its mind to it. As it pushed up, I made another inch or two toward my climb for safety, but it was a fuck-you death couple of inches. My hand, forearm, elbow, and upper arm began to work. Not in concert, mind you. More like a hipster jazz band, each doing their own thing, but at least they were fucking moving. My elbow collapsed once, sending me back to the dreaded slime-covered bottom, before rebounding and giving me some thrust. I was stuck in a no-man's land, halfway up, but still vastly short of my goal. My internal clock was crunching the numbers. Yep, I would need to breathe real soon. My heart was in overexertion mode. It was thumping so loudly in my chest it was hurting my eardrums with its percussions. My lungs were beginning to constrict on themselves. A fire burned within them like I'd inhaled habanero-infused smoke. How's that for a descriptor? That's the searing sacks of pain that were my lungs. My torso thought now might be a good time to get into the game. My stomach muscles convulsed as they clenched and released in brutally painful contractions. Can't say that I'd ever had a Charlie horse in my gut, and right now didn't seem like the optimum time to dwell on the new sensation. In between painful eruptions, I would force it upwards, ever upwards. I felt the cold night air brush across my head, so close, so achingly close. I dipped down grudgingly, knowing I was a second from taking in a deadly mix of water and all manner of microbes and parasites. One final surge. It was now or death. Simple as that. I tilted my head above the surface and sucked in a combination of sweet, sweet air and salty, tainted water. I coughed vigorously for a minute before I was able to expel the worst of it and also get enough air into my oxygen-starved brain and extremities. The zombies were shuffling around from the noise, but still the water was acting as some sort of crazy alien cloaking technology. Drowning throws up an instinctive red flag for mammals, and certain systems kick in. And the panic in me had not settled down. I had fought hard for this victory, but I would not be this lucky next time. A fair portion of my life, even before the Z-Pok, had been me rolling the dice. You won some, you lost some. It's the nature of the game. But when the stakes are your life, you play with loaded dice. Fuck the rules and fuck all if it's considered cheating. If you want to bet your friend a 12-pack on the outcome of a football game, that's one thing. Right now, these were stakes I was not willing to pay on, and this was not a debt you could run from. I'm not proud of some of the defaulted lines of credit I left in my wake during my so-called normal life. Especially that Best Buy one, when they sold me a piece of shit laptop that died after 3 months, and they wouldn't honor the warranty because it was a discontinued model. Didn't stop them from selling it to me, though, did it? Fucking pimply-faced sales puke still got his commission. Maybe a little guilt there, but none of that mattered now. Priorities, Talbot, I managed to say in a small, shaky voice as I slowly made my way to the edge of the pool. I didn't want to be any closer to the enemy than I needed, but if I pitched over again, it was my hope that I would fall against the lining and could prop myself up, stay above the casualty line. My teeth started to chatter. This time I thought that might actually be a good thing, I leaned against the vinyl. The body tremors started again. I could not control them. I certainly could not stop them. Water was splashing, and my body thumping up against the pool wall was making a hollow, bonging noise. The zombies were most definitely interested. I think my ankle was on the mend, but just because I couldn't feel it didn't necessarily mean good news. More than likely it meant the circulation was sluggish, or gone. I could not ride the night out in the water. I didn't think it was much past midnight, still long hours away from the warming rays of the sun, and if it was a cloudy, rainy day, what then? I reached a weakened arm up and grabbed the lip of the pool, while also tentatively placing weight on what I hoped was a freshly knitted ankle. The pop it made was audible through the water. The pain was sharp and sudden. Yep, it was safe to say my ankle was still there. Now the question was, could I do anything with it? I put as much weight as I could on it, knowing the answers that yielded would mean the difference between escape and becoming a midnight snack. I stood to my full height. If I thought I'd been cold before, it was nothing compared to what I felt as the wind blew past my soaked clothes. My skin was stretching due to the oversizing of my goosebumps. I wanted to make a grim joke about how my junk had retreated inside looking for heat, but I was pretty sure that might actually be the case, and that even if I did somehow make it out, it might not ever come back down. That shit you just don't kid about. I took a minute to look around me. For the most part, the zombies were doing traditional zombie things, smelling up the area, rotting some flesh, chewing on some human remains, you know, normal shit. But there was this one zombie, one with a little more brains than he had a right to, who was looking my way. He knew something was up, and he was going to spoil my little planned getaway. My rifle was at the bottom of the pool somewhere, and not only was I in no hurry to go back down there, I wasn't even sure if I could trust its effectiveness just now. M-16s and their civilian counterparts, the AR-15s, aren't particularly known for their ability to fire predictably when fouled. And the wet gloop it had been submerged in for hours can't have done it any favors. If the barrel was in any way clogged up, I could make an already bad situation fatal. I'd seen barrels blow up before, some on the battlefield as they were overused and others at ranges when dipshits failed to do even the most basic of maintenance. Most had escaped with minor injuries. Even those in battle had others around them to pick up the slack. But if my weapon blew, I only had me to count on. Yes, I would grab it because I had to, but I didn't think I dared to use it, even to signal Justin and Winters. If I caught blowback in the face and eyes, it would be enough to disable me and allow the zombies their treat. I felt better for moving. My ankle was holding up reasonably well, but the true test was coming when I put it under stress. I slogged around until I struck the rifle with the toe of my boot. Now I had to do a little gut check and reach back into the water. For some reason it felt like barb-laced ice cubes. There was a slight panic as my mouth dipped down and I almost went in face forward. I snagged it and jerked quickly up, happy for the weight of it in my hands, even if it was no more useful than a club. So there I was, standing in the middle of the stinking pool, pondering how in the fuck I was going to get out of there. Climbing the inner ladder seemed tantamount to Everest about now. Then I still had to get down and somehow make haste. Any maneuver with quickness seemed as elusive as a minotaur or a yeti, or more like a yeti riding a minotaur, or the other way around, if you want that visual. Wasn't gonna see it. I once had a fight with my wife, can't remember what the hell it was about, something inane, I'm sure, didn't matter. The point is, she had me so twisted up in my own words, instead of telling her not to fuck my shit up, I said, stop being a shit fucker. Instead of getting pissed off, she got a confused look on her face and proceeded to bust out laughing. So there I am, being all pissed off, having spoken a potentially horrible and rude insult. And she's laughing her ass off. I mean, to the point where she bent over and was grabbing her gut. I don't want to ever be a shit fucker, Talbot, and I would hope the same for you. And I'm not sure if I should thank you for that visual or not. She left me alone so she could go and enjoy the rest of her laugh and maybe ponder the question she'd raised. Not sure of the reason for the tangent. I guess I was just trying to show the importance of visuals and why you might want to be careful with what you use to display your thoughts. Remember, an idiotic picture will haunt you much longer than a dumb sentence. Right, back to reality. I was looking to the ladder, while also keeping watch on the zombie that was ever so slowly making his way over to the pool. Yeah, that one was definitely giving me the old stink eye. He wasn't completely sure what was going on, but the pieces of that puzzle were beginning to fall into place. If he got close enough, and I could make everything work right, I was going to shove a knife blade through his temple. We were approaching each other like two lovers might across a smoke-hazed dance floor, a slow, sweet song serenading in the background. We would finally meet up, look deeply into each other's eyes, kiss, and then a slow clap would ensue. Again, man, I don't know why my mind diverges like it does. I'd like to say it's a defense mechanism. Keeps me from going insane from the reality I was actually living, because really, a broken and decaying undead cannibal was ass-dragging what was left of his jaw over to bite into my face, and I was freezing my ass off, hobbling, broken-ankled through thick green sewer slime, carrying an inactive gun, to kill him, up close and personal. Obviously, you can't kill what is not alive, but you get my meaning. The only music we had was the percussion of my teeth and the hollow moan of the cold wind through his missing flesh. We both halted with the sound of a car engine approaching. I turned to the street, which had been to my back. "What now?" I asked. If Knox and or his henchmen were coming back, what was I going to do? Odds were I'd be overlooked in the pool. It would be the house he would be going for. I wondered idly whether rats could climb the aluminum siding and swim at me. "Talbot!" It was B.T. shouting. Like a dumbass, I tried to shout back. As luck would have it, I sounded more like Rose DeWitt of Titanic movie fame after she'd been in the Atlantic for an hour. A cricket farting would have carried more sound. By this point, the self-preservation part of my brain had kicked in, and I realized how bad of an idea that might be. "B.T.!" It was Justin. "Justin, are you guys all right? Where's your dad?" I could hear the concern in my friend's voice. "We're fine. Well, Dad might be busted up. He's in a pool in the backyard." "Talbot, answer me," B.T. demanded. "He's frozen and surrounded by zombies," Justin clarified. "Right. Hold on, pal. I'm going to get you the fuck out of there." "Thank you," I whispered. The car was idling on the street. B.T. didn't even need to climb the privacy fence to look over it. A flashlight that could potentially burn out retinas illuminated the area. "Whoa, you look like shit," B.T. said as the light found me. "You a zombie?" he asked. I managed to unfurl one finger, obviously the most useful one I had in any given situation. "Good to see you too, man," he said. The zombies made a go for the fence. "Can you run?" he asked, as he realized he was pulling them all away from the pool. I gave him a thumbs down. "You really do look like shit." "Got the Marines. We'll come up with something and get you soon. Hold on." With that, he took the light and was gone. Not gonna lie, there was a dip in my morale as he vanished. I wanted to be gone now, too. I've been in some armpits in the world. I've seen the horrors that one man can do unto another. Killing in war, while not necessarily the best way to go about getting something accomplished, is still leagues better than torture. There were times we came across whole villages that were tied up in a certain way. A rope bound their hands and legs behind their back, then noosed around their neck, so if they relaxed their extremities, they would begin to be choked by their own body pressure. There is only so long the human body can be forced to hold out like that. Knees and shoulders begin to burn as if they are on fire. Eventually, ligaments will tear. Yet this is still worlds better than when you try to take the pressure off your screaming joints and the ligature in your neck is compressed and your airway is pinched off. Waves of panic surge through your brain, forcing you to struggle and press even more against the bindings, producing a whole fresh wave of pain that you can barely tolerate before you start the whole process over again. It's criminal how strong our will to survive is, the horror we will endure to keep breathing. By the time we got to the village, it had been 2 days since the insurgents had worked their nightmare. Men, women, children, didn't matter. Every single one of them had been bound up and positioned so that they could watch neighbors and loved ones die next to them. Only one woman, one 85-year-old woman, had survived. For 48 hours she had fought to stay alive so she could tell someone, anyone, what had happened there. I heard she died 3 days after we'd freed her, her injuries too great. More likely she died of a broken heart. She'd only kept living to accomplish what she'd set out to do, to carry her people's pain to an ear that might give a shit. Why'd I relate that? Because right now, being in the pool was a form of torture, and I wanted out of it in the worst way possible. Not in an hour, not in 10 minutes, but right fucking now. BT's voice came back over the fence. Swear to God, just the sound of it brought me back. "Going to do a smash and grab, Mike. Get to the far end of the pool," he shouted. I was already there, so that wasn't a problem. I wasn't keen on this idea, as my brain slowly processed what he'd said. I heard the revving of what sounded like a diesel truck. I hadn't realized there was still some adrenaline in there, but I got nervous. If they misjudged their approach, I was certain I would not be able to jump out of the way. And it nearly went down like that. The ram truck burst through the wooden fence, sending a fence slat nearly 3 feet long right at me. It missed impaling me by inches, and that it missed had nothing to do with my cat-like reflexes. The flying stake had been coming in so fast I hadn't even had the time to shield my face. I just closed my eyes. It was sharp enough and had enough force that it went through the vinyl siding like a skewer through the skin of an orange. I would definitely have been kebabbed good. The ram symbol on the front of the truck was looming larger, and I had nowhere to go. The first zombie that impacted the front end was sent spinning wildly off to the side, as was the next. The bumper was taking some punishment, but the Dodge's advertising claim seemed to be holding strong. Built ram tough. Gunfire was coming out from both sides in sustained bursts, and still, that grill grew larger. "Close enough, man," was what I said as the truck obliterated the far side of the pool. As seems to be the case when the action starts, multiple things happen simultaneously. Sparky, the zombie who had a sense that I was there and trapped, so named for his spark of intelligence, grabbed the back of my head and a fistful of hair. As he was wrenching my skull backward, the truck plowed through the pool wall before coming to a skidding halt. Water did what water does. It rushed for the low ground. I was sucked out toward that opening like a turd in a previously clogged toilet. So, flushed with a vengeance, if that wasn't clear. Sparky had such a good handhold, he decided to come for the ride. My ankle, which was still throbbing in pain, was nothing compared to the fresh feeling of being scalped. I was heading straight for the front end of the truck and was in danger of splitting the tires and going completely underneath. My guess is I wouldn't stop until I made the curb and finally the storm drain, and by the way things were going this fine fucking evening, odds were there would be a red balloon tied on the cover. All of this action was Broadway show illuminated by the high beams of the truck. I was literally traveling toward the light, though I didn't think this was the way that scene was supposed to play out. My head was mostly underwater. Sparky had yet to let go. I was choking on slime again. Then the light dimmed and was nearly extinguished. I figured I was at the end. But unbeknownst to me, BT had exited the vehicle and was mitt out, going to play first baseman, with me as the baseball that dribbled down the first baseline. If you don't realize where I'm going with this, you aren't a baseball fan or don't know that I bleed red, not because that is the color of blood, but rather that of my beloved Red Sox, and that runs deep. If you're following, let's just say I hoped he didn't Billy Buckner me. A leg and a foot hovered above my head. I felt like a prehistoric rodent attempting to dodge the footfalls of a titanosaur.